Remember the feeling of rushing home from school, tossing your backpack on the floor, and turning on the TV just in time for the afternoon block of cartoons? Way back when life was all about schoolyard rivalries and making it home before the streetlights came on? Well, what if those Saturday morning vibes collided with an action-packed sci-fi adventure? In the new comic, The Ruth Avenue Raiders, the best, and let's be honest, the cockiest elementary school football team on Ruth Ave is about to face a defensive line unlike anything they've ever seen. We're talking interdimensional robots from Sector 7. When these kids are challenged to a match where the stakes are way higher than just bragging rights, they realize their old playbook won't save them. It's a hilarious, action-packed story about friendship, teamwork, and learning to step out of your comfort zone, all before the sun goes down. If you know a young reader looking for a new graphic novel, or if you grew up on the heart of Hey Arnold, the playground politics of Recess, or the what-could-go-wrong energy of Dexter's Lab, this is the book you've been waiting for. It's The Sandlot Meets Transformers, created by Mad Cave Studios Talent Search winner Damian Becton and artist Marina Otegua Ruiz. The Ruth Avenue Raiders is now live on Kickstarter, and you do not want to miss the kickoff. Head over to www.ruthavenueraiders.com right now to secure your copy of The Ruth Avenue Raiders, only available until June 24th. By joining the squad early, you'll stay in the loop and get access to exclusive early bird rewards and updates that won't be available anywhere else. That's www.ruthavenueraiders.com. Help us bring this 90s-inspired adventure to life. Win or go Chrome.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of comic books that have come out this week, and there are some big finales that we're going to be talking about here. And because they are finales, we're going to be getting into spoilers. So if you don't want spoilers for the final issues of things and the middle issues and maybe even some first issues, turn away here because we're going to do spoilers throughout for absolutely everything. Also mentioned at the top here, if you want ad-free versions of this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Plus, you get access to our very fun Discord through the Patreon. So come hang out. Let's kick it off talking about the ultimate issue of The Ultimates, number 24 from Marvel, written by Dennis Kemp, art by Juan Fregeri. As I just mentioned, this is the final issue of the title as they take the pain to Hulk in the middle of this big war that's been playing out through Ultimate Endgame. Now, we've still got one issue of Ultimate Endgame to go, as well as the Ultimate Universe finale, which is a little tour through the whole thing. I'll know Chris Condon, when we had him on the show a couple of weeks back, talked about that. That's a little thing that, like, provides a little bit more of a capstone to Ultimate Wolverine, gives a final, like, note there. And I'm assuming the rest of it is going to be the thing. But this is the final issue of the final, quote-unquote, ongoing title from the Ultimate line. So, not to blow it out too much, not to put too much pressure on this one comic book, but how are you feeling about this in specific, but how are you feeling about the Ultimate line in general?
Yeah, Justin, are you still camping, or is summer camp over? What's up?
Summer camp is just starting. And, you know, this is, I'm on board with Dennis Kemp. Like, I feel like, especially this series, he has turned in, like, back to back great issues that are punching way above their weight. The thing with this issue is when it's like, this is the last one, it feels a little arbitrary what we see in this issue. It feels like they're fighting the Hulk, and it's a great fight.
There's
some great ideas wrapped up in it, really cool.
Yeah.
But it feels like, oh, this isn't the end. And it's, I guess, technically not. I just feel like this book has become a little bit of a victim of what feels like a very bobbled end to the Ultimates universe. And so this book feels like it's like a big fight that was happening. They're like, hey, let's go over there where there are other fights happening. And we get this like truncated end where they go off to the final fight in the other book. And I don't know. The whole thing is I'm just enjoying what I have and trying to not think about the larger disappointments in the context.
Well, I disagree. I think bobbleheads are cool, and a lot of people love them. They're kind of like Funko Pops, you know. But I thought this, speaking of the action of the kind of Hulk fight that we got there, I thought that was a ton of fun. This was just, I thought, kind of turned up in a lot of different ways, and I really loved the art and the violence. I thought this was a blast of an issue.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree with you on the single issue basis that this is well done, a really good fight. I like Hulk has been a primary villain throughout this entire book, so dealing with him here and the way that they deal with him, I thought was very appropriate. It brings together some of the threads from this comic book. However, as a, like Justin was saying, as a final issue for this comic book, it doesn't work. It is a good one-shot issue that follows up on those threads, but it doesn't feel like the end. And like you were saying again, Justin, the last page is like, whoa, there's some stuff going on in Ultimate Endgame. We got to go over there. And that's a poor ending. And I don't put that on Dennis Gabb, even though he's writing the other thing, because that seems like they decided these are going 24 issues, then we're done. But man, these really could have used a wrap-up issue or something that focused back in on the team, or Ultimate Endgame should have been part of the Ultimates or something like that. Like, it's just off the way that this whole thing is happening, and it's really bumming me out. Like,
well, and again, it wouldn't be so much of a disappointment, except this entire universe was built on clockwork time. It was literally like a machine. They were like, where do you guys see how tightly constructed we did this? And then at the end, they're sort of like, whoops. And I'm like, wait, God, what are you, the TV show Lost? You just really blabbled the endings in such a way. Making fun of Lost aside, it does feel like that a little bit, where it's like, or Game of Thrones, where it's like, clockwork, well executed for years, and then in the end it's like, oh, sorry, we didn't quite have it figured out. I'm like, wait, what? You did it for so long. You did it for so long.
It's like they got it so far, and then in the last 6 months they were like, and Mr. Bean, you could finish this, right?
Yes, exactly. He spilled ink everywhere.
Whoops. This is a good last issue of a She-Hulk, Ultimate She-Hulk comic book.
Yes. It's
not a good issue, last issue of a Ultimates comic book, because we don't get to see most of the team. We don't get to see them come together or do anything.
But agreed. You did mention they are doing a couple wrap-up other issues, so
just
maybe they'll cover it there.
Sure, but that's another comic book.
And they do touch on, like, I like the Ultimate Iron Fist stuff that's in here. There is some good, good X still pushing out into the Ultimate Universe here in the very last issue. And I appreciate that. But it definitely doesn't feel like the capstone to anything, which is, I think, what we hoped.
And to blow this out even bigger, when they announced the end of the Ultimate Universe, one of the big things they said is they wanted these to be books that had a distinct beginning, middle, and end, so they could live on bookshelves forever and people could read them. And at the time, a lot of fans were like, boo, how dare you? I was a big booster of that. I thought, that's great. Marvel has struggled a little bit in their bookstore game, so give them something that is lauded to get in there. But trying to imagine anybody reading this and getting to the final trade of the Ultimates and being like, huh? What?
Yeah,
this
is not a complete story.
Is a complete bungle of even what they were trying to do. It's I don't know. Bums me out, man. Well, let's talk about another ending that I'm sure bummed nobody out. Batman 163 from DC Comics, written by Jeff Loeb, art by Jim Lee. This is the final, very delayed issue of Hattush, the sequel to Hush. By this team, Jim Lee has been very open about the fact that he's had to slow down his schedule exponentially for health reasons. He's doing okay. It's just to not work himself to the absolute bone, which has led to this lateness here. In this final issue, it's Batman against the entire Bat family because of what Hush is doing, which we all know what Hush is doing, and I'm not going to say what his plan is. Because it's like a really good plan that I can definitely tell you what it is, and I'm just not going to say what it is here. So he has this intricate plan, and then ultimately it ends with a really shocking moment because the Bat family is against Batman for saving the Joker, something that he's done many times throughout continuity, but this time was very bad.
Yeah, it was off this.
It's crazy to make everyone mad.
Yeah, and this ends with, I would argue, the funniest last page of the week.
Well, interesting. Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Like, the idea, there's some ideas here that I can get on board with. The idea that that Hush, even though we don't know how, and it's completely opaque and incomprehensible how, but the idea that the Bat family is mad at Batman, cool right. idea.
Yeah,
and the villains before. Are like, hey, we need to be with you because Hush fucked us over. That's a cool idea. That's something I like. I like that idea. And then this is spoilers for the end. The idea that Batman is killed, essentially, and Talia dips Batman in daddy juice.
Yeah. A little dunker.
Brings him back to life, and he's like, ah, I want to kiss you, Talia. I'm like, okay, I don't know how Lazarus works, but are you hot for sex when you come out of it?
That was funny. But the thing that actually made me laugh hysterically at the end is, so you have this big splash page that's supposed to evoke, like, the classic, I think it was Neil Adams panel of shirtless Batman kissing Talia. So, like, it's the same sort of thing. In the bottom, series. In the corner, it says, to be continued in Hattush 2. And it's a little logo of Hattush.
And just to be clear, it's the two. There's a 2 in the U, and then there's a 2, like, squared in math. Like, that's ridiculous. Crazy.
And we knew that, by the way, like, they were very open. When they first announced this, they said, we're going to do 6 issues, take a break, come back, do another 6 issues. Cool. So this isn't a surprise. Cool. What I thought was funny was the logo. It is just a crazy logo. Well, logo got me, man. I also really enjoyed, what did you guys think of the panel where Batman's in the sewer with all the villains, and they're like, come on, Batman, we've got to go. And then they're walking down like a little subway staircase, like they're the let's go out to the lobby candies.
Very funny.
Wow, that's an interesting image. Well, screw you guys. I had fun with this. I had a great Hattushian time with this. I thought this was really fun, a crazy twist, high stakes. Thought the last panel was insane. And, I also liked the part where Catwoman said out loud that she was in love with Batman once. So, I thought this was a blast, and I enjoyed it.
Well, what about Talia and Batman? Do you think that's just Lazarus runoff, or do you think he's like got feelings?
No, because famously, things you do after you've gotten the dip is, you know, not on par with your character. You know.
Well, and Pete, you like Batman. If you take a bath, you'll kiss anyone outside of the bath.
Yeah, I mean, it's as soon it doesn't as you matter who's bath, there. As soon as you get out of a bath, it's the first
you're
thing you
so
want to do.
Relaxed.
Yeah.
You're
so relaxed. Batman jealous. And Talia are getting back together. Do you think we're gonna get Detumian?
Right, exactly. We got another Damian pop, another potential Damian coming.
Detumian. Oh,
yeah.
I think that's cool. And let me be honest, and this is not to take Pete's train
of
thought always.
I just really want to quickly look up how baby made. Hold on one second.
How baby made?
How baby
made. Yeah, just write the words how baby made into Google or AI if you want. That's how I want to learn what sex is from ChatGPT.
Smart.
Tell me, chat, how do I do this?
Smart.
How do I do this, chat?
Well, give that's me a great racist question. Response.
You're really good at this.
I'm really good. Oh, thank you. I haven't had a sexual partner yet, but apparently chat says I made a baby.
They just added a thing that's a ChatGPT lets you know you're good at sex no matter what.
I tried to type that into ChatGPT and just said kill yourself. I guess I don't have a good response.
No, that's truly what it does a lot. But that's a sad thing to say right now. What I was going to say is, to take Pete's train of thought, in the context of Batman the Animated Series, I love the Batman-Talia relationship. So seeing that here, I was sort of like, there's a little something in the back of my head, you know? And it's either a spider bite or I like this.
I like this a little.
I agree. This is incomprehensible nonsense. All right, why don't we move on and talk about Exquisite Corpses, another ending 3 in a row. My God, Exquisite Corpses number 13 from Image Comics. Who put this together? This is crazy. Image Comics, written by Jamestown IV, art by Michael Walsh. This whole series has been about a tournament between a bunch of killers in a small town to determine who's going to be in charge of America for the next 5 years. There's a secret cabal that actually runs things, and it all comes down to this with two regular citizens who have taken up the weapons of two of the killers. They are facing off, and the stake of everything is in the balance by the end here. We mentioned this in the last issue as well, but even though I've enjoyed the series, sometimes it's been hard to hold on to the narrative. It all locked into place in the last issue.
Yeah, it did.
And that continues in this issue, which I thought was a fantastic finale. There's going to be more. Really excited and interested to see what they do there. There's going to be spinoff miniseries, etc. So good end to this series. This is really going to live on bookshelves for the foreseeable future.
Well, I agree with you. I really like the way this is a story that was so, like, wide. The lens was so open. It was anything. It was too much. And then the narrowing in that happened was really smartly done, to the point where this is just a great two-location fight where you're really invested in both sides. Really liked that. And then I liked that we got, again, JT4, meticulous. We got an end beat. We got an end of the story with some stuff to set up for the future, protagonist style. Then we got an epilogue, which is like, oh, a little random. And then like, oh, follow the series coming in July that follows this random idea. And then the return in the future of phase two of this. I thought was like, it's well done. And the breadcrumbs leading out, I thought were excellent as well.
Yeah, I agree. This is really awesome. I love the over-the-top, intense, scary action and just such a solid ending. I love the art so much. The mood that it sets for this book is so unique and cool. It's impressive.
Yeah, great stuff. Really looking forward to more. Next up, enough with the endings. Let's talk about Beginnings with Superman Father of Tomorrow, number one from DC Comics, written by Kenny Porter, art by Danny Earls. Now, we had Kenny on the show this week. He talked about this book a little bit, so do go listen to that. But this is a new Elseworlds title about what if, not to borrow another phrase, Jor-El ended up rocketing to Earth and landing on the Kent's farm instead of Kal-El, and things spin out from there. What'd you guys think about this one?
Well, it's crazy, like, talking to Kenny about it and then reading it, because he did mention in the interview how he was like, oh, wait, you see sort of the downstream effects of what happens when Jor-El's the one who crams into, I believe, what you called the baby rocket.
Yep.
That was my favorite part here is, you know, I feel like in a lot of Elseworlds, it's like, what if this happened, and what ifs? It's like, what if this happened? And it's just like one twist, and then you really follow that to its end in a very clean narrative line. This really pokes at the other, because the timeline is so different. Because he's an adult, you don't need to wait for a baby to age. Mm-hmm. So you get father, you get Jor-El, known as Jordan in this comic, and you get young Lois Lane. The one that I thought was really awesomely done was young Lex Luthor. Really mm-hmm. smart choice from the team here to have him see this Superman and be like, whoa, cool, not hate him. And not be like, I have to crush that to be inspired by him. So, like, those kind of choices, I'm like, oh, I definitely want to read more of this, because this is just right in the pocket of widely exploring this idea.
Yeah, there's something like being in the pocket. I agree.
I love the pocket. Yeah. It's warm. It's almost like an iron coffin, because it's warm when you want it to be and cold when you want it to be.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not a fan of Elseworlds, but this story,
because they're different.
I'm also not a fan of another, like, Superman origin story, but this story really won me over, which was impressive. I had two strikes going in, but I really thought the choices they made, like Justin was talking about, were really smart and cool. It made something that is not fresh seem fresh, which is pretty impressive. Love the action. I thought they did such a good job with this.
Doom Quest, number one from Marvel, written by Ryan North, art by Francesco Mobili. This is not exactly out of continuity, but it's an evergreen series. We talked to Ryan North about this on our show a couple of weeks back, that finds Doom discovering that Reed Richards has come up with a plan to save the entire Earth through time travel eventually. And so Doom decides he wants to do that. He wants to remake the world in his image. Things go a little bit wrong by the end of the issue. I don't want to spoil too much what happens, but if you're a fan of 80s and 90s television, boy, is this going to be in your wheelhouse.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. I thought this was great. You know, I was very down on One World Under Doom, so I was perhaps a little trepidatious to go into this, but I love Ryan North's Fantastic Four, and if you love Ryan North's Fantastic Four, you will love this as well, which just flips it over to Doom's perspective. It's smart, it's funny, it's well-scripted. I thought Francisco Mobili's art was great. I'm not really familiar with him, but I thought his Doom designs in particular, there's one where, like, a Doombot rips his skin off that I thought was just a very cool panel. So I had a blast reading this. Very excited to read the rest of the series.
What I loved about this specifically is it puts the essential flaw of Doom on display. He's like, I'm better than Reed. He sucks. I'm so much smarter. And then Reed has this great idea, and he's like, I'm going to do that idea. I'm going to do what Reed said. And then he does it, and Reed's like, why did you do this? And he's like, because I did it. And then Reed, like, messes it up for him. And he's like, how did I lose again? Like, it's such a perfect formula for him and explains why he is such a great villain, a monster, and very powerful, but has the most naked flaw of any Marvel villain. Mm-hmm. So it's just really well done. Ryan North has such a great understanding of how to write all of these Fantastic Four characters because his brain has been in this space for so long. And I'm excited for this. And it goes in a weird way. And I like the weird way it goes.
Yeah, I also really enjoyed this cool, interesting setup here. And also just like such a smart thing. This is something I would do if I had a time machine is go back and save Leo on the Titanic. You know what I mean? So that way he doesn't, drown, because there's room for two in the doorway.
Wow,
that's
real rewriting the history.
Takeaway from this comic book, 100%, no question.
Great. Wait, Pete, did you read this comic or did you watch the movie Titanic? I can't tell.
What are you talking about? The ending is the setup for that movie, Wow. Maybe Doom is going to be doing the Titanic movie, Maybe he'll take Leo's part.
Somebody's going to paint him like one of their French girls.
Mm. I love a nude Doom in his iron face coffin.
You said Doom was the most naked villain, so yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Let's make that happen.
Do you ever go into like a coffee shop and you're like, give me a nude Doom?
Nude Doom, please. Excuse me?
Extra
we told
hot,
you can't come here anymore. Extra hot for me, for daddy. I call myself daddy.
Oh, yikes.
Is there a name
nude
we can put
Doom
on this?
For daddy.
Daddy.
You can give it whatever name you want. It's in the rules. It's in the rules, guys.
Oh, my God.
Void Rivals, number 30 from Skybound and Image Comics, written by Robert Kirkman, art by Andre Bresson. We missed an issue or two here or there.
How dare we?
We missed so much. This is the end of the Quintessin War, and big surprise, they lost. The Void Rivals lost the ring to the Quintessins, and now they need to escape in Cobra Law's space well?
Yep. Great. Space life.
I'm so sorry. What?
Cobra la la la.
I'm so sorry.
Oh, Pete actually has an explanation. It was Cobra la 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 la.
That's right. Yes. Honestly, that makes more sense. I wish you were singing a lot of the dialogue in this book.
Oh, man.
My favorite part of this book is the part where the guy with Handroid is like really bummed out they lost the ring, and everybody's like, "Are you okay?" And he's like, "What? No, I'm fine."
Yeah.
And that's it. Like, there's no questions, no follow-up.
I like how he finally explained his talking kind of Handroid a little bit in this, 30 issues deep.
I will say, this book does treat Handroid as an anchor to reality. Yeah. Every issue, someone says the word Energon, I swear. A lot of Energon talk.
Who would be talking about Energon?
I talk about it all day long with my friends, family, loved ones.
Yeah. It's like gas prices. Everybody's talking about it. You know what I mean?
I'm like, when are we going to get this Energon? So I can really just put a little chunk of it in my tank and have my car talk to me. The other thing that happens in every issue is someone's like, oh, this guy's got an Android on his hand. A Handroid. And he's like, and the Handroid's like, yes, I'm the most logical character in this story.
Yep. I'm the only thing that makes any sense.
Well, if we could back up the truck here, cool cover. Great to see the Sharktacons also in the water, which is very exciting.
Where they thrive.
Yeah. Fantastic art. The Nostalgia Bath is just so great. I have such a blast with this.
Hold on a second. What's nostalgic in here? What is nostalgic in here?
Pete used to watch the Void Rivals cartoon every Saturday morning.
He'd get his Shantikans are big part of the Transformers, man.
Void Rivals cereal. Yeah. You had ordered the split bowl, so it was on both sides of the different races on the other sides of the ring. We know both of their names, so again, I'm not going to say them out loud.
We do. We don't need to say them.
Yeah, 100%. And you had your Handroid glove for your spoon that you could eat the Void Rivals.
Yeah, were you talking about that? Right? Autobots and Decepticons? What were you?
Pete, no, the Void Rivals. You're the childhood nostalgia bath Void Rivals fan. You know what I'm talking about.
I'm saying that this is talking about something from our childhood, which is the Transformers, in a unique way that honors the past by all giving us something new. It's an absolute blast. And it's also combined like a little bit of Vampire Hunter D, where you got the talking hand. This smashes up a lot of my childhood in such a fun, unique way.
I only hope that I'm honored as much as the Transformers are honored in this book, where they appear briefly and someone's like, what's your deal? And they're like, I don't know.
I'm out.
Yeah. Oh, we don't want to see them.
Yeah, get them out of here. Yeah. What are they powered by? Talk about that.
Yeah, what do they eat? What is their food?
What kind of batteries inside them? Say the C or D battery.
Anyway, great book. Absolute yes. Wonder Woman, number 20 from DC Comics, written by Kelly Thompson, art by Hayden Sherman. This is the final issue of the Season of the Witch storyline, which has found Diana tackling the new Suicide Squad, and things do not go well for her by the end here. No. Some big stuff goes down, and things get even worse for Diana by the end of the issue. Pete, you're clapping. What'd you think about this one?
Well, first off, fantastic cover. Such a cool cover. Such a great issue. I love this story. I love the twists and turns. I'm so invested in this great writing. Art is top-notch. I love the look and feel of this. I just think that this Absolute Wonder Woman book is such a cool take on her. And I just think you should be reading this comic. This is great comics. This is epic. The last panel is just so fantastic. I really felt it. I've been enjoying the crap out of this comic. Why aren't people reading this?
People are.
Yeah, good. It's a bestseller.
Great. Very popular book. And let's just do a victory lap that we're all doing great. We're all doing great. We're reading this. We're happy.
Why do people never watch that Titanic movie? That's what I want to know. Like, nobody ever watched that.
Exactly. I wish that had more of an impact on culture. Was there a singer that we could have elevated from that?
I can't think of one.
Yeah, I think Alanis Morissette sang on that soundtrack.
Yeah, she was singing. Oh,
are you thinking about the Britney Spears song, Oops, I Did It Again, where she has a brief dialogue break talking about Titanic?
I think, isn't that over the end when Leo's frozen to the side of the door or whatever? It's like, I froze up to the sea. this comic is great. Songs. I like the way that it continues to deepen the mythology. At the same time, we're getting the super heroics up top. The art substantiates both sides of that equation, which is really hard. This villain, we're dealing with a Wonder Woman villain renaissance in here right now between this book and the mainline title. So that's great. And the end of it, I was like, I don't know what happened, but I'm excited by not knowing.
Another fantastic issue of this book. Nothing further to say beyond what you guys said.
The defense rests.
We sentence this comic to death. Corpse Knight number 2 from Skybound and Image Comics, written by Michael Chavez and Matthew Roberts, art by Rico Renzi. This is about a resurrected knight who is traveling with his daughter to visit Joan of Arc, and they run into some trouble this issue.
Yeah, this is just, first off, cool cover. Last panel is badass. There's some real, like, oh shit moments in this. I, like, jumped. The art is amazing. I was just so impressed with the kind of design and flow of this. It's such a cool style to this, and that whole kind of dad thing at the end there, they're really gearing up for Father's Day. I thought this was very touching, you know, because I know you guys would turn into zombies for your kids, right?
I've never felt more seen as a father than in this comic.
Taking arrows for your kids, bro. Come on.
I mean, I definitely feel that part. And honestly, I feel internally like he looks in the big splash page about two-thirds of the way through this book, having been solo parenting for so long. But yeah, this is a great – I've been really enjoying this.
I've been pretty annoyed by this too.
I've been pretty annoying this.
Yeah, annoying this. Gorgeous art in this book. Absolutely beautiful, even with the flesh and blood and bones throughout. Superman number 38 from DC Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Dan Mora. It's still primetime, baby, as Superman Prime meets Witchfire, who first tries to ensorcel him and then teams up with him to go on a mission together to fight some rogue demons, leading to a surprising twist at the end of this issue. There's a thing that I definitely want to talk about in here that I thought was utterly fantastic from the writing perspective, just like blew me away a little bit. But generally speaking, what did you guys think about the issue?
Well, I thought it's a solid meet cute here that we get, and I like these two. They seem fun together. I like the kind of meta Vertigo comic line. I thought that was fun. Yeah, this seems like a great kind of deal. So I was enjoying this.
Yeah, I like this as well. I mean, like we've talked about, I feel like all the Superman books are pushing. So they're pushing everything forward in such a big way at the same time. So that's exciting in a time when it feels like they'd be a bit holding the line.
I'm having a very fun time reading this. I think Joshua Williamson does a great job writing Superboy Prime. And he's really, in a very smart way, dealing with the things that he did wrong. Like, this isn't, now I'm going to do good and I'm a good guy. He is trying to do better. And everything that he did terrible in the past keeps getting thrown back at his face. Temptation gets thrown into his face all the time. And that's an interesting place to put a character. The thing that I wanted to call out, though, and this is kind of a big spoiler for the book, but I enjoyed this so much, is there are throughout the book what looks like printing errors in the dialogue. And every time I saw it, I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe this got by. And it just keeps getting worse and worse over the course of the issue. But it turns out that's actually part of the plot that's revealed at the end of the issue. And I thought that was so smartly done. Like, I don't know if that bothered you guys while you're reading it, too. But it was driving me absolutely crazy while I was reading the book.
It didn't bother me at all.
And we've talked about how, like, the DC, they're really pushing, they're allowing the creativity to flourish in a way that usually is reserved for, like, more like an Image or a place like that, where they're letting, like, oh, yes, be weird with this. And they're really just welcoming that into these, like, their top-tier titles, their mainline titles. And that's awesome.
Super fun. Next up, Wiccan and Hulkling, Raid of Ultron, number one from Marvel, written by Wyatt Kennedy, Tegan Quinn, Zoe Tunnell, and Josh Trulio, art by Stephen Byrne, Luciano Vecchio, Rachel Stott, and Bradley Clayton. This is the publisher's annual Pride celebration issue, and this year they're focusing on Wiccan, Hulkling, and their extended family as they are attacked by various Ultrons. And the structure here is basically you get them all together, they decide to trick Ultron by splitting up, and then we get individual tales by individual teams before they come back together at the end. Pete, you're giving a nod. Did you enjoy this one?
Yeah, I thought this was fun. I really liked the kind of story structure and action. I thought they did a good job of setting up and really delivering on this. That one kind of like annoying robot was annoying, but other than that, I thought it was a blast.
I like the way this really focused on the relationships between the characters in a way I really liked. When I was like, right, this is sort of like a Bat family, but here it's the sort of they're not a family that ever comes together, and we don't even really get them together much in this book. But the fact that the ties between them, I was really into and wanted to see more of, like, what is this family? Can we get Viv hanging out with the rest of them a little bit more? Because I like all these characters. They're very different. But they do. We get to see some of their relationships. Also, especially the last story in this is so weird. Like, the Ultrons was wearing like a sweater around his neck and stuff. Like,
that was absolutely my favorite one. The one where we got the like dad Ultron hanging out with his daughter, who he had built to parallel Viv. Very fun. Very fun story. I do have a question that I don't have an answer to, but I'd be curious to hear from any members of our LGBTQ+ listening audience here. I was definitely of two minds when I was reading this, because like, I like these characters and I like this story, but I wonder how much you need to push that this is a Pride issue in the issue in terms of the actual content and flow of the story, because here it's not. They're telling a story about these characters versus Ultron, and that's pretty much it. So I don't know. There's a part of me that's like, hey, if you're celebrating Pride, let's celebrate Pride. Let's elevate it a little bit. But I also understand the idea of just letting these characters live and be, and that's the celebration in and of itself. So I don't know. I don't know if you guys have any takes on it, but.
Yeah, well, I don't know if we're the dudes to ask for that. Yeah. But I do think that, like, in general, when you're reading a comic and sometimes they're kind of, like, beating you over the head with something, it gets a little old. But sometimes just, like, having it be who they are and it's just a part of their kind of being is also great. You don't need to call attention to it. So, you know, I think it really depends on the kind of story that you're telling. But I hear you, because it makes sense. Like, are we celebrating, or are you just like, we doing a story and then throwing it under the umbrella that is Pride, you know?
Yeah, so. And I'm not, to be clear, I'm not being like, they need to go through a bunch of like gay trauma and we need to deal with that, or like they need to be, I don't know, oh my God, they were time travel back to Stonewall, or like that does not need to happen in the story. But I think a lot about like DC's stuff, which does lead into that versus this. So it's just different storytelling methods.
Well, and the thing about this is it feels very much like it's allowing these characters to be themselves rather than being like you said, highlighting like that they only have to deal with some sort of something specific to their sexuality. So like, I like that part, and the extended family we get to see and how different people react to their central relationship, I thought was cool, and it was a celebration of on its own, you know?
All right. Case closed. Capes number 7. No, seriously, if anybody want to weigh in and let us know in the comments, I would love to hear from you. Capes number 7 from Skybound and Image Comics, written by Benito Cereno, Robert Kirkman, art by Mark Englert and Corey Walker. So the deal with this comic is it came out years ago, the first 6 issues. They recolored and revamped the art to release it for a more modern context. It takes place in the Invincible Universe. And now this is the first original issue of the book that's come out. It also has a backup featuring Elemental, who is a character from Invincible Versus, the new video game, introducing her to the Invincible continuity. So we haven't been reading the first 6 issues. Jumping in on issue 7, what do you think, guys?
This reminded me of just classic Image comics, taking you back to, you know what, especially Savage Dragon.
Yeah.
This was like an issue straight out of Savage Dragon from, you know, any era you want, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. And it felt very much like a brightly lit superheroes just doing their business.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying for sure. But I don't know. Like, it also felt a little kind of like it was very bright, but also kind of sad. You know, it's like this idea that, like, hey, you know, like your life is tough, but also superheroes' life isn't as great as you think it is, you know? And it's like, oh man, do I need that? But okay. So. I'm not sure, but I did enjoy parts of it and really liked the art.
I would have liked it to lean into more what you're saying, Pete, and maybe it did in the first 6 issues, and I just don't remember / missed it. But I also like the idea that, like, these guys are not as good as the Guardians of the Globe, who right now are a bunch of nobodies themselves, and they're definitely not as good as Invincible. They're just, like... At one point, somebody calls them rent-a-soups.
Yep.
And so the idea of, like, rent-a-cops, but in the world of superheroes is very fun. So this issue didn't quite hit for me story-wise, but I definitely would be interested to check out more to see how they play with that idea. The Flash, number 33 from DC Comics, written by Ryan North, art by Gavin Guidry. This issue, The Flash is trying to... stop a nuclear bomb from detonating, and he just cannot find it until he figures out where it is. Justin.
Yeah, let's go, Moose Boosh. Let's hear it. Little palate cleanser.
How dare you?
Palate cleanser. Let's see it. Come on, man.
Don't you guys disagree with me? I mean, this issue.
Just to give some context here, on the live show, you called it an amuse-bouche. So
I called it a palate cleanser. Yeah, I didn't say the words amuse-bouche. I said it's a refreshing. I like the way this book is written. It has a lot of energy. It feels like just a rejuvenating title in the middle of my stack, which
you
is heavy.
It the aperitif of comic books.
Exactly. Just a light sorbet of comic book creativity.
I take a little. You used to be on my side. We used to not like Flash together, and now you're like, oh, Flash is such a great thing in the middle of the stack. I'm like, who is this guy? You've changed.
Here's the thing. You're mixing us up because Alex liked Flash the most, and then for like 2 years in there, the dark Flash storyline that was like fucked up, I was like, I love this, and Alex was like, I don't like this, and you guys were friends, and you guys went on vacation together, and you guys hung out all the time, and it was like a whole different vibe.
Yeah,
and now, yes, cool, I'm on board with the Flash.
Yeah. All right.
Unrelated, Pete, just put your hands over your ears. Justin, you want to go on vacation?
We should go on vacation.
Okay. All right.
Let's vacation at Pete's house. Just
I always Jedi married to one of us, damn it.
Not to keep big up in Ryan North, but that's 2 out of 2 for him. This is another great, really fun issue. It is very pleasing and enjoyable to see the Flash just doing very specific Flash stuff. Come back, hang out with his family. There are some bigger things that go on here in terms of the future, but it's just Ryan North, like, he's a master of done in one storytelling. Even when he's doing like a 2 or 3 issue arc, it still feels like a complete package when you're reading the issue. And it is, I wish it wasn't such a lost art in comic books, but he's bringing it back, baby.
I agree. It is a tight package. Cool cover. I don't really like Flash that much, but I did love this issue. I love the kind of team up he did with Captain Cold here. This was great. The colors are awesome. I was impressed with this. I thought this was a nice, refreshing thing in the middle of the stack, as much as I don't want to say that.
Well, so I was right, is what you're saying.
I didn't say it like that, but...
Well, welcome to the tasting menu, and I hope you're feeling refreshed for our next book.
Which is Fireborn, number 2 from Image Comics, written by Kurt Pyers and Franklin Jonas and Timmy Heeg, art by Patrick Mulholland. This takes place in the same world as Lost Fantasy. It's following a kid who has bonded with a dragon egg and is now being pursued by a bunch of characters that I would describe as Top Cow-esque.
I wish I was bonded with a dragon egg. Yeah,
That's the whole thing. Like we said it with the first issue as well. I was curious to check out this one because I was really impressed by the art in the first issue in particular. Mm-hmm. I thought the layouts were really nice.
Yeah.
And this is very much in the same realm as a Witchblade or a Darkness mixed with Rogue Sun, basically.
For a great sort of mid-course charred dish that I think really fits right.
Don't
here.
Char
in the middle.
My dish, bro.
This is a bit charred. We're getting a lot of like setting up Lost Fantasy stuff here as well. So this definitely like touches on some much larger context. And now, Pete, Alex, do you like this in the same way that you like the Sun book?
No. I don't dislike it necessarily, but it feels very even with, sure, I'll read an issue of Witchblade, or, yeah, all right, throw me the darkness. That's fine. I'll take a look at that issue.
Throw me the darkness.
It's not really grabbing me because I feel like I have read this sort of thing a bunch of times before. I've read Rogue Sun. I've read Radiant
Black. You don't have
Black,
to show off. All we of get these. It. You read a lot
I can
of
read. I can read.
Yeah.
And I do think the art is very good. I did like the backup story. I thought that was really nicely done and very intriguing. Mm. So I'm not off this book necessarily. It's just not... It's not quite making the case why it's something different to me yet.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and disagree with you here. I really thought that the art and story and action in this were fantastic. I thought this was really badass, man. I thought this issue really delivered in a cool way. And look at that cover, man. If that doesn't get you excited, like, don't pick it up.
Ah, wow. You really get covers.
Judge a book by its cover, Pete says. Next up, Green Lantern, number 35 from Everykick, DC Comics, written by Jeremy Adams, art by Iguara and Amontos. We're following two storylines here as on Earth, Kyle Rayner is pretending to be the bodyguard of Odyssey, who is becoming a big Hollywood star. In this issue, she is encouraged to get plastic surgery. It goes wrong. Meanwhile, in space, Hal Jordan is palling around with one of the Wonder Twins, and they're on the run from something. I don't even think they know exactly what it is, but there's more twists and turns with that as that goes. I'm kind of having a blast reading this series. I'm having a very fun time.
I agree. Wow. It's really dipped into a body horror. This issue, anyway, is especially like a body horror take. The Hal Jordan stuff as well. And that very much at the end of the Hal Jordan, like intermezzo, to use more food terms, we get like, find out what happened to him some other place. Check out Aquaman, I guess. And I was like, oh, really? Really kicking you out to another whole other area. But I mean, Kyle Rayner is one of my favorite Green Lanterns, my first Green Lantern when I first started reading Green Lantern. So, like, I always love him. I think the art is especially excellent in this. It feels like such a great, fun summer read that these guys are mm-hmm. pushing out.
Yeah, the Dr. Creepy Face is really fantastic. The art's really great. This really freaks me out. Bugs wearing human skin. It's makes my skin crawl. So I wasn't digging as much as you guys because I was scared. But, this was very cool.
You were scared. Well,
I just like the – I mean, it's not like really subtle Hollywood parody or anything like that. But the idea of taking – oh, everybody feels like they need to get plastic surgery when they get a role in Hollywood – and seeing that out to some sort of like alien threat conclusion, I thought was a fun place for this book to be. I hope they keep in it for a while.
So you're saying all Hollywood elites are bugs?
Why do they keep asking for sugar water? You know,
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Sugar water.
The Sentry, number Shout 3 from Kingpin. Marvel, written by Paul Jenkins, art by Christian Rosado. Maybe the saddest issue of the
What's
week.
Up, bro?
Oh, my God. The Sentry has been dealing, as usual, with his dual identities as the Sentry and the Void. The realization he came to the last issue is that he is the Void and the Sentry is the alternate personality. We don't know exactly, I don't think, know what that means. But the other thing, the reason this seems to be happening is because he is watching his dog slowly die and he can't save him.
Jesus.
Leading to the event that you may be able to figure out that happens this issue that twisted my heart, man.
Yeah, I swore at you as when I finished this book. I was like, fuck you, Zalbin. Fuck you.
For making you read something that you liked.
Yeah, no, I didn't. Nope.
You didn't like it?
No, I didn't.
Because it made you feel.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a big fan of Century, but this Paul Jenkins's, you know, work has won me over. But this issue, come on, man.
Well, what if I told you that the dog didn't die, but the dog actually went to a farm upstate?
There you go.
Yeah, I don't believe you.
No, he did. Yeah, I actually have some
pictures. Let's go visit the farm then.
I can't go right now. I have work, but they sent me some pictures podcasts. And he's very happy on the farm. He's very happy on the farm. There's a bunch, like he's been chasing around the chickens. He's having a lovely time.
Chicken fucker.
That's really cool. What? Keep on fucking that chicken? Is that what you're going to say? The art in this book is excellent. The way that Paul Jenkins is really like, this is essentially his character and the way that he's able to follow the natural progression down the path to what we get here, which is super specific. Reed Richards, very important to the Sentry character, and we get a lot of him here trying to talk to Clock. We get like some human AI interactions, which I liked that. I like the take on that. And honestly, the last page, I was like, I have no idea where this book's going to go in the next issue.
Yeah. Hornsby and Halo, number 0 from Ghost Machine and Image Comics, written by Peter J. Tomasi, art by Peter Sneeberg. This is following a girl who is a demon, right, who was given to a good family, and a boy who is an angel who was given to a bad family.
Classic
they are slowly
switcheroo.
Discovering their powers and their origin story. But this is also part of a crossover event called The Unbelievables that's resetting the table for this entire part of the Ghost Machine universe of books. Justin, this is another book that we were reading for a while, kind of put to the side. Now we're back with the 0 issue. How'd you feel about it?
Well, what I like about what they're doing with this is they're not just, you know, bringing in this Unbelievables idea. They're recontextualizing all of their flagship titles and saying, like, well, here's, because each of the premises were a little bit like, well, here's the story we're telling, but we're not giving you all the information. And then these Zero issues are sort of saying, like, here's the whole deal.
Yeah.
Sort of bringing a new audience to show you, here's the story. It's about the switcheroo, heaven and hell, are trying to rebalance. All they do is fight. Nobody wins. Maybe there's a way to just sort of find balance by sort of giving away the firstborn and seeing if the nature versus nurture will turn them into something new. And that's a great premise for a story, and we get that sort of very much said to us, and then a little bit of the next phase of this laid out. I don't quite know what the Unbelievables is or are. Like, what are we doing with that? And maybe that's not the point, but it's very funny to me that they took the coyness out of their main titles and sort of told them here in these Zero issues, but then created a whole new thing to be coy about that we don't know anything about.
I agree. I think that the information they gave us was great. I don't like Zero issues, but I was happy for this kind of full story we got, this kind of explanation. So it was really easy to kind of get on board and figure out what was going on. And plus, I'm a sucker for talking pets, so this was a lot of fun, fantastic art.
Swamp Thing, 1989, number 2 from DC Comics, written by Rick Veitch, art by Tom Mandrake. This is I'm trying to think how to frame this up, but there were 4 issues of Swamp Thing originally planned that never got published back in the day. One of them was almost finished, but not completely finished. And finally, that got reprinted as Swamp Thing 1989, number 1. Now we're getting the never-before-conceived second issue of this 4-issue arc. And there's some big stuff going down here as Abigail Arcane is about to give birth. Swamp Thing is tumbling all the way back to the beginning of time. We talked to Rick Veitch about this, and the issue that he was really excited about was next issue of this book, where the place that we end up is Swamp Thing's tumbling back to the end of time. He said the thing he could never crack back in the day on this is what is the origin story he wanted to tell. What was the Big Bang story he wanted to tell about the DC Universe, the cosmology thing he could add in there. And that's what this issue is leading up to. That will get the reveal next issue. So very excited to check that out. But what did you guys think about this one?
Well, I thought this was a really fun cover. Great front and back matter. The art's fantastic. Love a good tripped out story that feels like it's from the 80s. Great to see John Constantine. I really enjoyed this. I thought this was a really solid issue. It's fun to see them trying to do kind of interesting things like this.
Yeah, I really like this. It's like big idea storytelling that feels of, we just don't get it in the same way. And it makes sense. This was conceived a long time ago. But like, we're crossing over into a lot of different like DC characters that we don't see very much of. You get Constantine. Now, Pete, you're a Constantine like freak. How'd you feel about this opening sequence where it's him?
Right.
And Jim Corrigan, the Spectre.
The Corgs,
just like, and a woman who has a snake, and they have snake sex.
Right.
So they all steamy.
Yeah. Now, is that a threesome or a foursome? A threesome with a snake, or does the snake count as part of it?
I think if you can tell by the picture, the snake counts. You know what I mean? Okay. So you got to count the snake.
The snake is definitely a part of it, based on the picture.
Yeah. Right. So you think that anaconda do want some as well?
Oh, yeah.
I would say. Maybe that's, there's, who wrote that, with that line? You know, maybe Rick had a hand. You know,
maybe it's around the same time, so it totally could be. Yes, that was pretty wild. I was not expecting to see John Constantine and the Spectre having a threesome of some sort.
Foursome.
I didn't have that on my bingo card.
Well, you gotta update your bingo card, bro.
I do, actually.
I like not to keep dwelling on literally one page, but it's like, he's like, give me 10 minutes. And it's like, clearly like a wild sex scene. You got like handcuffs on the bed, rope, gloves, but there's also like arcane symbols all over the wall. Like they were having sex while also like doing weird fucking devil stuff too. Like yeah. It was all one big debauchery. Yeah. So
it is kind of crazy that the whole deal with the last issue was like, well, you can't possibly show the Swamp Thing as a cross. That is a step too far. When this book was regularly doing stuff like that.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
Yeah. John Constantine fucked the Spectre. And they're like, that's fine. This other thing, no.
Well, and like the Spectre in DC continuity is like the revenge of God.
Yes.
That feels like, you know, you want to be mad about something, Christians. You could focus there too. You're so yeah. mad about the cross stuff.
Yeah. To be clear to anybody listening or watching this, we want them to ban this book again.
No. Yeah, I'm dying for it.
That's what we're
hoping. I love the end as well, where we get like a hell of a hell hangout. Mm-hmm. I just love this. I also just shouts to DC for the packaging they put this, all the classic ads, the letters page. It's really cool.
How did they get that stuff? Like, there's an ad for Jason Takes Manhattan, I believe, in the back there.
Yes, that's the last page.
Right. How did they get that? Like, how do they get the rights to that? How do they get, like, a high-quality version into that? I have so many questions.
I mean, they just probably just took a comic page and scanned it.
Yeah, but
it
you can't just, like, there's rights involved when you do something like that. Because
their team
like
reaches out to somebody else's team. They come up with a price, and then you'd say, okay, we're done.
They're like, well, here's how much we charge you for the ad back in 1989. Now we're going to charge you again. And they're like, okay, I guess we're advertising Jason Takes Manhattan.
I'm sure they didn't pay any money for that. I'm sure they're like, hey, do you mind if we run this again as part of this? And they were probably like, yeah, go for it. It's fun. It doesn't hurt anybody on the product side. It's at re-airing an ad for free.
Yeah. I guess so. All right. Why don't we move on and talk about Feral, number 23 from Image Comics, written by Tony Fleece, art by Trish Forstner and Tone Rodriguez. Our pets are being held in a facility and tested on to figure out what is going on with the strange virus that has been taking them over. And then on the flip side of the book, we're finding out the same thing happening to the Stray Dogs characters.
Oh, man. So
that's a pretty big deal. What do you guys think?
You got to be totally fleecing kidding me. This is just when they got caught. I'm so stressed out about these goddamn animals, these pets. Holy shit.
These goddamn animals.
These fucking things. This book is so stressful, man, but it's so
okay.
Cute.
It's okay. I read ahead it's on this, so and they adorable. Go to a farm, and they're playing, and there's, like, a bunch of chickens they're chasing around.
I don't trust the pictures that you sent me.
I did not draw any of them, all right? Whatever you think, I didn't draw them.
Okay, great. Yeah, this book is great, but stressful, and art's amazing.
I love that they did this. They just know that their readers are on board with this and probably also just know Stray Dogs as well. And so we're doing this. It is very stressful. There's the last images on both of these sides of the story are upsetting at the very least. And I'm just caught up with this. And we still don't know the nature of this plague or what's happening. Is it a world-defining thing? Is it just like this county or
and
these
we're
random?
Deep in it. It's not like this is issue 4. You know what I mean?
My very much intended pet theory about this book, that they're going to somehow turn this into the virus for The Walking Dead, is getting stronger by the issue, I feel like.
Yeah.
And they might not even explicitly say that, but I could see them being like doing some visual nods to Walking Dead, because we get a hint that it's made a jump from pets into humans, this issue. So, I don't know. We're getting there. I feel like issue 25, that gravitational pull, knowing what Tony Fleece does, I feel like it's almost too strong to not be like, they go into a hospital and there's a guy in a coma there while zombies are roaming outside.
Dude, if Negan shows up and starts murdering these pets with Lucille, I'm going to kill you, Azel.
That's a while off. That's issue 100 of Feral, but I guess we'll see.
Do you think it'd be great if they just really followed that along and we got to see like one of these cats be like, is this fucked up with the guy with the bat? It's fucked up.
Or
you see what he did to Glenn?
I want to line up some people, but I don't want to do that first. Line up these pets so I can test them. I can test them with my back.
Yeah, Negan test Lucille out on some pets.
The Peril of the Brutal Dark, an Ezra Kane mystery, number 4 from DC Vertigo, written by Chris Condon, art by Jacob Phillips. We're really getting to it now as Ezra Kane, our central detective, yeah, is dealing with a big supernatural mystery that maybe will destroy Manhattan slash the world. Ooh. Justin, you are our Condon and Phillips guy. I mean, we're all Condon and Phillips guys.
We're all right in there, but yeah. Yes, man, there's some just great action in this. Really, like, oh God, something bad's happening here, and somehow not everyone dies. Some people certainly do, but not the titular character who we continue to ride with. I mean, the art in this is fantastic. We've talked about it up and down, but to highlight the colors, I feel like I do this every time we read an issue that comes out. Like, the colors in this are just so excellent.
Yeah, and I completely agree. I also love the lettering. It's really cool. The art style, the tone of it, just great action, like you said, the suspense. This is very enjoyable. The style, the old-timey kind of thing. It was funny because I was reading a comic in front of my nephew, and I was trying to explain how, like, back in the day everybody smoked, you know, and he was just like, what are you talking about?
Did you do the Donald Duck thing with him when he sees Huey, Louie, and Dewey smoking the cigars, and you made him smoke all the cigars until he turned green?
No.
You should try that.
But you will do that, right?
Yeah. You're an uncle. You got to try that.
And Donald was their uncle.
Right.
I don't know if Donald's a great role model for this kind of stuff, guys.
Yeah. There's comparison points between you and Donald Duck.
Come on. I got my pants on, temper. Bro. No, yeah, you wear your little sailor suit over there, though, don't you? Your cute little sailor suit? We've seen you Donald Ducking, and I don't mean going pantsless. I mean wearing a cute little sailor suit that just hangs over your junk. It's just about how cute the sailor suit is.
Yeah. There's a lot of things that are cute about it. One of the things that's cute is the sailor suit.
Here's the thing. Are we meant to think that Donald Duck served in the Navy was dismissed with honor?
With honor, you think? He was not dishonorably discharged?
Hard to say. I guess that's a story we have yet to tell.
Sure.
And then he spent the rest of his life being like, I'm going to wear this. I'm going to wear this every day. Just so everybody knows.
I don't think he was dishonorably. I think he was honorably discharged.
Do you think that's his dress uniform? Is that what you're suggesting?
Yep.
I think so. What do you think it is?
It's not like, I don't know. Do you think maybe like he went to war and his mind cracked? Like he's still, maybe that's why he's so angry, is because he thinks he's at war right now.
Do you think, was he in the Punisher book that Garth Ennis did when he cracked up?
Yeah.
Back in Vietnam? Was Donald there?
Oh.
How many people do you think Donald killed overseas?
Yeah, they have. Marvel has said that if you read The Nom, you know, that classic comic book, Donald Duck is in every issue. They don't talk about it, but he's there. And he's speaking of war, he's wearing his little sailor suit. Speaking of war, The Infernal Hulk, number 7 from Marvel, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson, art by Adam Gorham. We're following the monstrous Infernal Hulk, who is turning the whole world into monsters. And this issue, he goes after the X-Men. We find out he has a weird connection to mutants, which they're very worried about. Yeah. They're worried that it might turn them into monsters. And he plays the new X-Men team like total chumps.
Yeah.
They're just top to bottom chumps in this issue, nonstop chumps. If you're reading the regular X-Men book and you're like, boy, these guys act like chumps, maybe there'll be a break here. Oh, there's not. Chumps.
Okay. First off, cool cover. I was upset that Cyclops was on the cover, but I was kind of hoping maybe the Hulk would kill Cyclops and make me very happy. But I think this is just such a great book. I love the art. The art is so glorious. The story rocks. This is just next level stuff. I really think PKJ is killing this. Sick teaser image for the next issue. I'm absolutely having a blast with this book. It's just so much fun.
I was shocked by how far into the X-Men continuity this book went. It was crazy. It's like really... and like, what is the... What do we think about Glob?
Oh, man.
Glob's going to become hot, I think, is what we're getting here. Right?
Hot Glob. Check it and see.
I really like what Philip Kennedy Johnson is doing with this. This issue, I thought, did some fascinating stuff. Like all the discussions about mutants being like, we're not monsters, right? Was very good. Like it was very upsetting and offsetting. Cool. So that was very well done. I do get frustrated that this new X-Men team is, not to keep using the same word, but a bunch of chumps, because they're just like standing around the entire time being like, oh boy, this seems like a real problem. And then they get to a warehouse and they're like, it is a real problem. Uh-oh, we can't do anything about it. And meanwhile, Hulk is just going around grabbing a bunch of Morlocks. He grabs Leech. They kill Barrow in this issue.
Oh, man.
Which I was like, what is happening? Like, I flipped past that page several times because I'm like, surely I could not have seen, not that, like, she's the best character in the entire world, but Hulk just folds her in half and breaks her, and there's blood and guts pouring out everywhere. That's crazy,
Can she come back from that?
I don't think so. Like, her whole thing is pulling out bones, not growing more blood.
Yeah, there's a lot of, it's a real schlup situation, to quote the sound effect. It's a splurk and
I
the
could
schlup.
Not believe that happened. That was, and to, like, be like, yeah, we killed Barrow in a random issue of Infernal Hulk is crazy to me.
Yeah. But, cool. I mean, I do, it's just, this was a stressful issue to read because I was like, when that he killed Barrow like that, I was like, oh, no, what's happening? And then I was like, Magneto, you don't got it, dude.
Yeah.
You're not going to do this. And he doesn't really. He does a bad job.
Yep.
To your point of being chumps, but I do. I'm just really invested in the story as well. I don't know what the Infernal Hulk is up to. Mm-hmm. And that feels, usually the Hulk is like very clear what's up to, but there's chaos. This is the opposite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's finally exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Red Roots, number two from Image Comics by Lorenzo DeFelici. This is one of my favorite issues, last month. It was following two absolutely wild stories. One about this killer assassin who is tracking down some folks. And when he gets killed at the end, gets sucked into a red pool that looks like blood. Meanwhile, there is a woman who finds an increasing amount of heads showing up in her house. And then at the end, an orc or a goblin or something like that shows up for her. We follow up on that this issue, see how those two stories intersect, but still don't have a lot of answers about anything. What'd you guys think about this? Good follow-up to the first issue? You still on board?
No book goes harder than this one. Yeah. This book is like, do you not know what's happening? We don't give a fuck about that. And like, you don't, but like, I would compare this to Void Rivals, a book where I also don't know what's happening, really. But this book, I feel like in the minute-to-minute interactions, I see what's happening. I see, especially this issue where it's like, she's like, what is this? They wake up, she wakes up. There's like a near death. We're dealing with very specific characters. It's not because we don't know the full context. We're very focused on a small group of characters and what's happening to them. So I can still ride with this. Void Rivals is the opposite tack. It's going as wide as possible. So you're sort of lost in a bit of chaos and the miasma of the whole thing. And I think that does work sometimes in that book. The last issue of Void Rivals, this issue of Void Rivals less. So not enough about that. But I am really enjoying this. I'm making a comparison.
Stop trying
because
to pick a fight.
I'm not trying to pick a fight. I don't want to be caught talking out of two sides of my mouth when I am like liking this book when I don't know what's happening. When in other books, I have the same. I used to have that as a complaint. Okay. But this book, I think the art's great. I like where this story's going, and I look forward to slowly learning about what's happening.
Yeah, I agree. The art is absolutely fantastic. I love also the start of this issue. And you had me at some head lopping here. You get this kind of monster dog's head that knocked off in such a badass panel. This is cool. This is weird. It's really very creative and interesting. I'm great art in action. More of this, please. I'm really liking this.
Rick and Morty Forever, number zero from Oni Press. Written by Daniel Kibblesmith, art by Troy Little. This is following up on the Rick and Morty The End miniseries. And now Rick is basically a watcher. He has all universal knowledge, all the things that he's ever wanted, but he can't interfere with anything, and it's driving him crazy. At least until he figures out how he kind of can, and things spin off from there. So I got to tell you, not to be like a Justin and slam one thing to big up another, but Rick and Morty, the TV show, came back this weekend, and that was not funny, and this is. So there was a very stark contrast, I thought, between watching the episode, which they really lost the track a little bit last season, and just like, I don't know, the energy isn't there anymore in the same way, but the energy is here in this book. So if you are watching new episodes of Rick and Morty and you want that humor, you want that like sharp smartness and innovative creativity, read this comic instead of watching the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there a better like translation of something than what they're doing right now with this book, this issue specifically? I feel like from an animated show to comic book, it's just really excellent.
I mean, the only thing I can think of is Adventure Time, which you also really love. Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's true. That was. And man, can Ryan North get a compliment out of this podcast or what?
For one time?
I do agree. This is awesome. This really feels like the best parts of the show in such a good way, and really funny bits. You know, I was pleasantly surprised by this, because when you put up Zero Issue, I crossed my arms, and this uncrossed them.
Yeah. Good stuff. In Your Skin, number two, from Image Comics, written by Aditya Bidikar, art by Som, based on the life of Pete LePage. This is about a woman who, I mean, it's a direct translation. I was reading this book, and I was like, Pete did this. Pete always tells us this story. Nope. This is a thing that Pete did, and they turned it into a comic book.
Yeah, anyway, you wore Rick Moranis' skin for a while, right?
You can't prove it. Oh, you killed himself, but now what happens?
I'm dead. This is about a girl who is a big fan of a Bollywood star. So, of course, what does she do? She kills her, rips off her skin, and puts on her skin using magic, and starts to go steadily insane because of that. I think that's the story that's happening here. What'd you guys think about this one?
Yeah, this is really creepy as fuck. It really messed me up, but the art is great. The paneling and art choices are amazing. There was a nice flow to this comic.
Yeah, the cutaways to the couple times we see the skin not quite working.
That's like a jump scare. Really, it was like a jump scare.
Yeah, definitely, and really well done. So, yeah, I do like the art. I mean, this is a book that it does take you a minute to understand exactly what's happening, that we've jumped back and we're leading up to the events of the last issue in the first, you know, half of this issue. But there's the ideas and sort of the metaphorical things that happen. There's a lot of smashed mirror stuff that I thought was cool, and different just scenes. There's a sex scene in here that I thought was really well done in the horror side, but also just the character revelation side. And the end of chapter two, the very last page, I thought was just awesome.
Yeah. Great art. The Amazing Spider-Man, Spider-Versity number two, from Marvel, written by Jordan Boris and Joe Kelly, art by Per Perez, with Rafael Perez Granados. Norman Osborn has started a school for spider people to teach them how to be stronger if they ever need to take down him or other villains. And this issue, he builds some robots like the Sinister Six to instruct them. And the robots go a little haywire, or do they?
What?
Or do they?
Yeah.
I'm really enjoying this series. We talked to Jordan and Joe about it at various times on the podcast, but I really like this issue, in particular how they leaned into the spider people having fun with the idea of going to college.
Yeah.
Like, it's even what I thought was a nice little textural thing there is, rather than being like, we have created the school for these people and now they're the school situation, the spider people are such nerds that they're like, oh, let's really play that up. Wouldn't that be fun? Wouldn't it be fun to be in dorm rooms together? And
yeah,
that's exactly right. Like, when they hit that, I was like, oh, yeah, of course. They know these characters really well. It executes on it really fun, in a fun way. And they're being very careful to delineate the spider people, because often they can just feel like a line of Peter Parkers all essentially doing the same thing in different places.
Yeah, I really thought, I love this team. I like seeing them together. I like them seeing working together. It's great art that brings a fun tone to it. It really matches this really well. And yeah, what Norman Osborn not being on the up and up? I've never heard of that before.
Yes, but the twist worked. The sort of double twist of it. I thought it did work on me, so I enjoyed that. I want to shout out the art as well. There's the fight between Spider-Boy and the robot that everyone's watching is really well done. There's some great just angle choices and dynamic action that I thought was cool. And I really liked the drinks that Spider-Woman and Norman go and grab at a dumb bar. Then made a great martini.
Yeah. Kill All Immortals 2, number 5 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Zach Kaplan, art by Fico Asio. Our Norsemen are battling Genghis Khan and his cronies, try and regain their immortality. This is the final issue here, so it's the final battle for that. But there's another series coming, so there's a big tee-up at the end here. What did you guys think about this final issue for now?
This is another book that really just works. It just I don't know why exactly I'm so tied up with it. Like, the action is just really good, and the stakes going from them being immortal and sort of unhappy, and then this, I'm just hanging on every panel, like, don't kill any of them. They could die. They'll die. And that little switcheroo has really worked on me, and then what happens in the issue naturally did as well.
Yeah, this is awesome. I really love the kind of coloring and the way this comic looks. It does such a great job of pulling you into this world. It's very kind of badass. But I was really impressed by this. Solid.
Hyde Street, number 12 from Ghost Machine and Image Comics, written by Jeff Johns, art by Ivan Rice. This is continuing the storyline of the Butcher of Hyde Street, who gets released this issue. Wouldn't you know it?
Oh, man.
Not a great idea. They heard his name and everything, and they did it anyway. Maybe leading to some big character deaths, potentially. I guess we'll see how things work on Hyde Street, since we don't know the whole mythology as of yet. But this is good. This continues to build. This is the first big, real multi-part storyline that they've done, and there's a fair amount of danger. I didn't realize how invested I've gotten in everybody over the course of these issues.
Yeah.
So that was emotionally nice for me to feel.
Yeah.
Well, and I think the genius here is that I was like wondering, like, oh, we're doing all these one shots on this universe and building up all these characters. I'm like, what? How big is this going to get? I'm like, wait, maybe they were creating victims to go down. And maybe that is what this is. And I gotta say, really got really smart, really slow played it in an excellent way. The character that dies here was upsetting, even though these people are all literally monsters.
Horrible, yeah.
It was upsetting, and I'm still continue to be more invested in, like, what is Hyde Street? We get a lot of, every issue we get a little bit like, it's actually not what you think, and I want to know.
Yeah, this is crazy fun. I really like the choices. There's some real oh shit moments in this. And what's kind of a cool reveal is we're becoming attached to these people, but it's also not one character is safe. And that's kind of scary and cool in such an interesting way. So really impressive, like you guys are saying, the world building and how they're kind of weaving things together. Very confidently, very smartly. So, yeah, really impressive. And, of course, the art continues to be fantastic.
You're attached to them, but their bones, much like marrow, are becoming unattached from each other.
Rip marrow. Did you hear about Mimi Green? Number 1 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Cotter Goldsmith, art by Josh Cornillon. This is about a internet personality who got canceled and heads to a facility to try to ride it out and deal with some of her issues at the same time. But there is a hint that something way more terrible may be going on at this facility while she is there. You guys are all internet personalities. How'd you feel about this? Attacked?
Yeah, exactly. Well, Pete's not being canceled for another 2 or 3 hours, so I think he can still enjoy this.
He scheduled out his very racist
week. Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, no.
I mean, a lot of meat, a lot of real juicy meats in this.
Oh, boy.
Yes, agreed. Pete, what about you?
Cool art, solid first issue, really grabs you with the blood and monster stuff. Cool vibe to it. I'm scared to check out more.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I did really like the art, but this reminded me a bit of other things that I've seen or that we've read recently. There was the, oh my gosh, what was the one from the team behind Umbrella Academy where they're all at a facility and there's a superhero there and the nurse is... And they're like making fun of Bored Apes. I'm forgetting what it's called. Chris Weston was on it. I know that.
Yes.
But same sort of thing where it's like there's something bad in this facility and the longer we stay there, the more it comes out. I think the issue is that I need to know more about Mimi Green to get into this because I feel like we don't exactly know her or why she was canceled. And it feels like that needed to be put up front. So we can get more hooked into her character.
You want to hear about Mimi Green.
Yes. But maybe we'll get more of it. I don't know. We'll see.
I bet we will.
I bet there will be additional issues. The Seasons, number 10 from Image Comics, written by Rick Remender, art by Paul Azaceta. In this issue, winter has come for everything, or has it? There's a big twist by the end.
All right, Zalbs. I got a second to last, Zalbs. Seasons, really? I mean, the artwork alone.
It's the second to worst thing that we talked about. I've said this already. I ranked them based on quality. The best book that we talked about was The Ultimates number 24.
And the second, as
we established and discussed. And number 28 in my rankings is The Seasons. That's how bad it is.
It's heartbreaking that it's all the way down
here. And get ready, because we have another book after this that's even worse.
Yeah. I art's just so amazing. These characters are so bright and great, and this is such a cool and interesting idea. The Sisters Fighting breaks my heart, but the action is great, and the oh shit last panel is fucking fantastic.
Yeah, Paul Azaceta's art is excellent, as we're saying. The color's excellent. But, we've gone away. As I was reading this, I was like, oh, we're so far away from the, like, circus coming to town and the missing parents.
But not.
And then we start to get a little curve back to it in a way that feels like this is just a great steady hand at the ship here, at the steering wheel for Rick Remender on this. And I...
Don't doubt Rick Remender, man.
I'm not doubting. The only thing is, like, these books all keep ending, and we need new ones.
So I got to tell you guys, I love Paul Azaceta's art in this book. I think it's gorgeous. The last couple of pages in particular, there's just a thing that happens that is so expertly staged. It's awesome. And I love that every issue. I have a hard time hooking into the story here.
Yeah, you don't like this one.
Because you don't have sisters. Love it. That's what it is.
But, and I don't support women. There is a note in the beginning of the letters page where Rick Remender's like, so far, I'm paraphrasing here, but at the beginning of the letters page, it's like, you know, so far, nobody has guessed what this book is actually about and what is actually happening. And there was one letter that I had to hold back on printing because it got close, but that's the only one. Nobody's actually guessed it. And that, to me, I was like, okay, maybe the reason I can't get into this book is because he hasn't actually said what it is yet. And once that twist comes, it will retroactively grab me by explaining everything that's been going on so far. But
interesting.
I don't know.
We'll see. I am curious if
if something's going to turn the corner for you just based on that information.
We'll yeah, I hope so. I love, maybe I just got to keep reading the letters page. That's the main thing. And now the worst book that we're going to talk about this week, This one fucking sucks. Five Gears in Reverse. From Image Comics, written by Ed Brubaker, art by Sean Phillips. Just another shitty criminal novel by these piece of shits.
Oh, how dare you, sir. How dare you.
No, this is, if you read Giant-Sized Criminal that came out back in December, I want to say, there was a tale of Ricky Lawless, and as Ed Brubaker explains towards the end of this book, He originally wrote that story thinking that it was just going to be a one and done that went to giant-sized criminals, specifically because he was thinking about Ricky Lawless a lot because they were making the Prime Video show. And once he wrote that, he realized, oh, actually, I have a couple of other things that maybe I could say about Ricky Lawless that might be kind of interesting spinning off of this story. Additionally, Ricky's girlfriend, Mallory, hasn't appeared since the second book, I think, which right, was yep. like a decade ago or something like that, maybe more. And Emilia Clarke plays Mallory on the show and was like, okay, so what's her backstory? And Ed Brueger was like, I don't know. So yeah. This book is him being inspired again about Ricky Lawless and also trying to actually explore who Mallory is and why she is there. And that's what we get over the course of the book. So in all seriousness, another banger of a criminal book by this team.
Yeah, just excellent. Just excellent. Good.
It's hard to come up with new words on such an amazing team. The art is just so phenomenal. It's just such an amazing vibe and tone for this storytelling. The action is fantastic. The writing is smart, interesting characters. This continues to be fantastic.
It's so great. The thing that I really like Ricky as a character, I hope we get more with him. I like he's such a fuck up, but you get to see him make these dumb choices and then sort of do the right thing in a bad way and then win in the end a little bit, but also lose forever. And it's great. It's just the everything is excellent. And man, did this make me get excited for the criminal show, and we still don't know when it comes out.
Great ending to this comic.
We thought it was going to come out last fall. I thought, like, September or October, and then when they were going to release Giant Size Criminal, I thought, okay, maybe it'll come in December. But, yeah, here we are halfway through almost 2026, and we don't know when it's coming out yet.
It has to come this year, though.
It has to. I don't know what's going on with it. It makes me a little concerned that it's been on the shelf this long, but we'll see.
Yes, unless they're waiting to have it be, like, a big fall debut. Like, if they are going to drop it in a month, big concern. If they make the announcement in, like, July that it's coming in, you know, September, October, then I think that's exciting.
Totally agree. Yeah. Maybe they're going to do something at San Diego Comic-Con.
What?
That place. Yes.
Well, there you go. That is it for the stack. If you'd like to support the show and all the shows we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice. To subscribe, listen, and follow the show, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
And if you're feeling down or a little bored, throw a snake in there. You know what I mean. Pete.